Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way.
Welcome to Real Old Reels, movie fans. We are Robin
and Lisa
here with another classic favorite, something indisputably upbeat and quintessentially American. We are talking about Rodgers and Hammerstein's play turned movie, Oklahoma.
What a show!
A lot of Rodgers and Hammerstein's music is well known and fantastic, but there's something so just rousing and cheerful about Oklahoma's scores. Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, Oklahoma, the sassy Many a New Day and Can't Say No, the comedic Kansas City and the romantic Surrey with a fringe on top and People Will Say
and
Where
Judd
I
Is
Left
Dead.
Judd Is Dead. I've missed some, but they are honestly all my favorites. I love them all.
Yeah, I remember singing Poor Judd Is Dead around the house.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
The folks that really knowed him, knowed beneath them two dirty shirts he always wore, there beat a heart as big as all outdoors. As big as all outdoors, Judd Fry loved his fellow man. He loved his fellow man. He loved the birds of the forest and the beasts of the field. He loved the mice and the vermin in the barn. And he treated the rats like equals, which was right.
They're actually a lot of them, like even the romantic one, People Will Say We're in Love. Funny. Like everything's funny about it. Maybe that's why I like it. We loved this one growing up, and we had a hearty dose of musical films. So, you know, we had a lot of Rodgers and Hammerstein collaborations, but among many others. And
so we know what we're talking about.
So, yeah. Well, I would say we definitely stuck to a certain period when they were all made, you know. Mm-hmm. The 1960s had a lot. And I've done a lot of thinking about it over the last week, and I think I'm prepared to claim that Oklahoma is my favorite of the Rodgers and Hammerstein's plays.
Oh, that's a bold statement.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out which one was my favorite, but there's so many. Sound of Music, South Pacific, The King and I. It's a lot easier for me to say which one's not my favorite. Looking at you, Carousel. But Oklahoma is definitely top five, maybe top three.
Yeah, that's still pretty good. I think what I love about Oklahoma is that I don't think there's a bit of it that takes itself too seriously, honestly.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us what Oklahoma is all about for like the three people that don't know what it's about?
So Oklahoma has a few side plots, but the main storyline follows the romantic journey of Lori, played by Shirley Jones, and Curly, played by Gordon McRae. They have this classic romantic comedy type of love where they flirt with each other and then they belittle each other. It's lots of fun.
Are you really going to drive to the box social with that Judd fella?
I reckon so. Why?
Nothing. It's just that everybody seems to expect me to take you.
Maybe it's just as well you ain't. We don't want people talking about us, do we?
Do you think people really do talk about us?
You know how they are. Like a swarm of mud wasps. Always got to be buzzing about something.
And what are they saying? That you're stuck on me?
Uh-uh. Most of the talk is that you're stuck on me.
They're feeling the waters to see what the other thinks of each other before fully committing to declaring their undying love. But there's more in the way than just their egos. It's keeping them apart. The farmhand Judd has taken an interest in Lori too. And because he's more assertive than Curly, she agrees to go to a dance with him instead of Curly. But Judd gets a little bit handsy and Lori finds her way back to Curly. Of course, there's many dance numbers and physical showdown between Curly and Judd. And in true rom-com fashion, it ends with some happily ever-evers for almost everyone involved.
There's a lot of teasing. It's pretty friendly for the most part between Lori and Curly, and that's a pretty fun dynamic of their relationship. I like how when Lori gives Judd attention to kind of get back at Curly, because he kind of assumes like, oh, we're a thing and I can just kind of talk to you however I want and just assume that you're my girl and you'll do stuff with me. That sounded bad. That you'll go to the dance with
Go to
me and
dances with me.
yeah. She gets more than she bargained for when she decided to go with Judd on to
Yeah.
the dance. The lighthearted fun of Oklahoma won the hearts of audiences, and it had an unprecedented run on Broadway. This was the first production that Roger and Hammerstein collaborated on, and though they were well known and established in their own right at that time, there was a bit of pressure to add heavy star power behind their first play, like having Shirley Temple for the lead role, which would have been interesting. And well, obviously, she was grown up by that point, and Groucho Marx for Allie Hackam.
Allie, Lori and me been having an argument.
About what, baby?
About what you meant when you said that about driving with me to the end of the world.
Well, I didn't really mean to the end of the world.
Well, then how far did you want to go?
About as far as, say, Claremore?
What's at Claremore?
The hotel. In front is a veranda, inside is the lobby, and upstairs, baby, might be paradise.
I thought these just bedrooms.
For you and me, baby, paradise.
That would have been interesting.
Yes, they both had some strings of failures behind them. And so the people who were backing their production wanted to ensure that it would be a success. But the dynamic duo, insisted, they weren't a dynamic duo yet. This is for their first team effort. They insisted on getting the best for the roles, even if that meant unknowns. And even more unconventional, they didn't even want the absolute best singers for their musical. They wanted the best actors. Even their choreographer was unknown and untried on Broadway. And she, Agnes DeMille, who was the niece of Cecil B. DeMille, a really big director during that time, during the silent film era and after, was responsible for the 15-minute dream ballet sequence. And I think other bits too, which was very unique and required actual ballet dancers to sub in for the actors. And she is the unsung third whiz in the partnership of Roger and Hammerstein that made Oklahoma a raging success.
Yeah, and like you said, that scene is very unique. And although it took lots of skill, I'm sure it's my least favorite scene in the movie. It's just a little weird, but maybe it's better on Broadway. But that part that makes me laugh cringe every time is when the showgirls start flapping their skirts at Lori. They just have the most like nonchalant, passive looks on their faces. They're like the most grumpy looking showgirls
Oh yeah, it is.
I've ever seen.
Yeah, all of it's pretty interesting. Well, we'll get to why I think that it is a remarkable part of the play, because it is. It like from our perspective, it was like, why don't they just cut that part out? It seems to
Yeah.
break the flow, but there's a reason why it was kind of a big deal, and maybe we'll touch on that in a little bit. But first, let's talk about. I want to know where this play came from. Where did the idea and the story come from?
So the first version of the play was written in 1933, and it was called Green Grow the Lilacs. It was by a writer who grew up in the Midwest and just wanted to have something that reminded him of home, really. And it didn't have the musical score and finishing touches until 1943 when it was released on Broadway. And at this time, of course, America was at war, and one of the big reasons why Oklahoma was so successful was because of the light-hearted, catchy songs.
And then I put my ear to a bell telephone, and a strange woman started in to talk
to you.
What next?
Yeah, what?
What next? Everything's up to date in Kansas City. They've gone about as far as they can go. Went and built a skyscraper 7 stories high, about as high as a building ought to grow.
the world had enough seriousness and needed something happy to escape into. And also, as you kind of said in the beginning, something American. And what's more American than cowboys?
Cowboys, you know, doing ballet.
Yeah, cowboys doing ballet.
I think that if there's anything very, very witty with American audiences, is really meshing two very different genres together, like cowboys and ballet, and just, you know, mixing kind of everyday people and, you know, nothing too highfalutin. I feel like that's a good word for talking about cowboys, and something that is a little bit more highbrow, like ballet.
Yeah, and it works.
It works. And so they had a soft opening at first. It had even a different name after Green Grow the Lilacs. And people liked it all right, though critics weren't overly generous with it. What ended up making all the difference on Broadway was adding the titular song Oklahoma. After that, audiences couldn't get enough of it. Roger and Hammerstein knew early on they had something magical when they teamed up, because they both came from hard previous work relationships and circumstances. Roger belonged to another team called Roger and Hart, and they had a number of successes, but over time Hart became severely unreliable because of his alcoholism, and Hammerstein had a string of flops. They found in each other a kismet for success because they worked so well together. When Roger and Hart worked together, Hart required music of Roger before he wrote lyrics. And Hammerstein's previous partners all needed to write the music before Hammerstein wrote the lyrics, which stifled their preferred way of creativity and their flow. And Roger preferred to write music to the lyrics that had already been written down. And Hammerstein preferred to write lyrics first without being bogged down by the music. So when they worked together, it was magic. And after Oklahoma was on Broadway, it ran for 10 consecutive years, touring and on stage in Broadway. And beyond that, they had a number of tours since and revivals. And one critic at the time said, among other nice things, it has, at a rough estimate, practically everything. Another said in summation that Hammerstein's lyrics were not as witty or sophisticated as Hart's, but they were more likable. And the songs, all critics agreed, were catchy and delightful. It kind of makes a lot of sense to me that they preferred working that way. It would be really hard to write lyrics to music that wasn't meant for the lyrics.
Like you said, it's nice to have the simple lyrics, because they're easy to remember and they're more catchy and get stuck in your head.
Yeah, it's kind of the key to success that the Beatles had. They had really memorable music that people could sing even when they weren't listening to it. So after this amazing success, a lot of enthusiasm about it. Even Hart, who actually encouraged Roger to seek out Hammerstein, admitting that his professional life was in shambles, threw his arms around his former partner and said he never had a better night in theater in his life. So not a bit of bitterness there. Pretty.
No, that's nice.
Amicable. Yeah.
I like that.
As we said, the songs are great. And for being a musical, just about everyone in the United States and many beyond recognize the music and can even sing some of the songs by heart. I've even read that theater history time can be marked in relation to Oklahoma, as in this production was pre-Oklahoma and this one was post-Oklahoma. And this is, as I understand it, because no other theater production blended music, dancing, and a coherent plot so seamlessly, so effortlessly. Audiences enjoyed it without any hiccups, I guess. If you think but if you think about it, that actually is a huge deal and sort of a big ask for any actor to be a triple threat. You need to act, you need to sing, and you need to dance, which ends up being essential for this type of production, a Roger and Hammerstein production, and it became the standard that we have seen since. So it's no wonder that theater produced plays with great plots, great music, or great dancing, but none shone equally the way that Oklahoma did.
I didn't realize that Oklahoma was so groundbreaking.
Yeah, and I didn't either.
You're making a good case for why Oklahoma is your favorite.
They had a string of successes after that, so they found the magic formula, and I think other people riffed on it since. One young girl from a small town in Pennsylvania remembered her first time seeing Oklahoma on stage, and it changed her life forever. And that little girl was Shirley Jones, who we'll talk about shortly. Oklahoma was doing so well, and so were a lot of the next series of collaborations between Roger and Hammerstein for the stage. There was Carousel and South Pacific, King and I, all of them. And that meant it was time to bring them to Hollywood. One of the keys to success was getting the right cast, and Roger and Hammerstein were not afraid to get unknowns even for the movies. They just wanted the best. So there are some famous people in the movies, but they were willing to take a chance on people, on the right talent. Shirley Jones wandered off the street for an open audition, and she blew the casting director's mind, and he ran across the street to get Richard Roger himself. She didn't recognize him as the biggest deal on Broadway at the time, and so she sang again for him. And he asked if she could wait 20 minutes until his partner could get there from home. Her accompanist had to actually catch a flight, but Roger said that he'd have the orchestra play with her. And she sang a third time, and Roger and Hammerstein asked what her plans were. She was going to start school the next week, I think, she said. Instead, how about a contract? They counteroffered, and she was signed right then and there.
Yeah, which was pretty unusual to sign a long-term contract with directors instead of a production company, apparently. And so she was linked to Rodgers and Hammerstein, had a contract with them, which is why she did a lot of work with them initially in her career. One of the funny things about her audition is that you said that she auditioned for Rodgers first and then Hammerstein came later. And so when Hammerstein came, he asked her if she knew any music from Oklahoma, and she said she was familiar with the music, but she didn't know all the words, which she thought was kind of funny looking back because she didn't realize that she was talking to the lyricist of Oklahoma. But
Whoops.
he didn't seem upset or anything about
He didn't
that.
hold it against her.
No. No, he just gave her the words and had her sing it. But I also think it was really funny that she was so unaware of her talent in comparison with others. Shirley Jones was in the church choir at age 6, so she was used to singing and she did a lot of stage productions in her little town growing up. But she just assumed that everyone could do that. She didn't know that singing was challenging for some people. She had a lot of just natural talent and she didn't know that it was anything special until she auditioned for Rodgers and Hammerstein.
She's just one of my favorite musical singers. She just got a stellar set of pipes.
Yeah, she does.
Delicately put. So she went on the Roger and Hammerstein train, and she did some side parts at first. It wasn't as if she went straight into the Laurie role. So she did a several plays. She was an extra or like a dancer in South Pacific, and but then she won the part of Laurie in the film version of Oklahoma, and it was her very first film and her very first leading role. But they had a lot of faith in her. She has an extremely beautiful soprano voice, was a natural on camera, and was fresh-faced and gorgeous. And that usually means the married men in Hollywood come knocking, which they did for Jones. Richard Roger even put some moves on her, but she had the best response. She removed his hand from her knee and told him that she'd always be grateful to him, and he was just like a grandfather to her.
Yowchi.
Shirley Jones admits herself in her book, Shirley Jones, a Memoir, that she was ill-equipped for Hollywood life. First, she was policed going into a diet on the Oklahoma set, which was not overseen by a professional, but by some of her fellow cast members. They were kind of enforced it for the directors and stuff. If she
They
gained,
seem real fun to work with.
yeah, really. If she gained weight, they insinuated that Gloria Graham, who played Ado Annie, could easily take over the Laurie role for her. And so she just stopped eating and fainted
Some
when.
good old-fashioned hazing.
Right. So she just stopped eating and fainted when she did her pond bath scene, and rumors erupted among the cast that she was pregnant. The hairdresser, who became very close to her, insisted that the poor girl was pure as the snow on a Christmas roof and hadn't eaten in a week. So, of course, she fainted. On Joan's first opportunity off the set, she bought herself 10 candy bars and sat down and just ate them all. You go,
Good for
Shirley.
her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as I know, no cast members from the stage production transferred to the film production. Agnes DeMille choreographed the numbers for the film, but apparently that was her only major film credit, as her ballet choreography didn't always translate to film. So there you go. Little validation for you on how you feel about the ballet number.
Yeah, I don't wish anything ill against her.
Not my thing. I don't know. I think I might miss it if they were to take it out, though. I'd be like, what happened to that weird scene? I miss
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I do like the song, like
Out of my
the
dreams, that one.
yeah, I like that beginning part of it.
Well, I like it when they reach up their hands when the veil comes from heaven and they're just
Yeah.
like, where did that come from? And they start dancing. Great. And then, oh, and the way the cowboys dance with like their arms folded and their,
Bow-legged.
yeah, that's
Yeah.
good. Really good.
It is kind of interesting that Judd is the only one who's not a ballet dancer.
That's ballet for you. It's inconsistent.
There's something there.
The film cast is fantastic. Even they didn't have anybody from the stage production transfer over to the film production. It's a great group of people. Gordon McRae, as I said last week, is Curly. I honestly have a hard time seeing him in other things because I'm like, Curly, why are you acting that way?
Right. Well, even seeing him in Carousel, I'm like, why are you such a jerk?
Yeah, why are you
What's
a
wrong with
jerk?
you?
That's not who you really are. And Gloria Graham and Gene Nelson as the couple, Ato, Annie, and Will Parker. I mean, it's really hard to beat their little subplot. It's hilarious.
Yes, probably my favorite.
Yeah, just spot on. Rod Steiger, I think is how you say his name, as Judd, is great. And the Aunt Eller character, played by Charlotte Greenwood, was actually written with Charlotte Greenwood in mind, but she wasn't able to commit to the role when it was on Broadway. However, even just 10 years later, they still wanted her as Aunt Eller, and she got the role in the film.
I'd like to say a word for the cowboy.
Oh, you would you?
The road he treads is difficult and stony. He rides for days on end with just a pony for a friend.
I sure am feeling sorry for the pony.
Honestly, and if we want to talk favorites, I'm stuck. There are just so many fun scenes and songs and silliness. I don't know where to begin.
I love them all for different reasons too. But I do have to say that some of my favorite lines surround the Ato Annie subplot.
Yeah.
When Will Parker comes home from his trip to Kansas City and is talking purdy to Annie, the line I love the most is when he says that he was thinking about her and.
Oh,
Goodwill!
stop saying goodwill.
There are so many good lines in
When I
that. And
give
then
you a
the
kiss.
obnoxious laughter
Oh, Ada Annie, honey,
of
you ain't
Miss
been off my
Cummings is
mind since I left.
just great.
All the time for
Oh,
fairgrounds. Even when I was chasing them steers. Why, I'd rope one under the
Even
hoof
the
and I'd pull him
dancing
up real
in
sharp. And he'd land on his
underwear,
little
talking
old
about
rump.
boys scene.
And then
Still,
I'd think of
it's
you.
a great song.
Don't
I
start
sing it when I
talking
do the dishes, honestly.
purdy.
Shirley Jones asserts that she isn't the innocent moral compass that her most popular characters portray her as, but neither does she have the kind of star power that really sells print. She was a young woman from a small town trying to make a living, so the gossip columnists and the Hollywood reporters found her dry. But the crew adored her, and that voice and that natural acting ability carried her through a long, successful show business career. She's 90 years old now, and she's popped up in things on IMDb as recently as 2021. Amazing.
Wow. Yeah. And if you read her memoir, which you should because it's pretty good, you'll find out that she wasn't as dry as gossip columnists thought. She had a really interesting life. I just think that, like, even her book is one that like I would probably pass on because I would see her as boring and dry too. Like the only reason I read it is because you suggested it to me.
Yeah, it was good.
But yeah, but like she isn't like the characters that she portrays. She's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. She had a long run on the popular show The Partridge Family, as you know, although I didn't really, I think I've seen only bits and pieces of it. And she won an Oscar for her role as an innocent woman who falls for the lies of a traveling salesman and loses her reputation and virtue, which is called Elmer Gantry. But I know her best. I think you know her best for her musical roles in Oklahoma, of course, Carousel, and another role as the critic and love interest of a con artist salesman in The Music Man.
Yeah, and I love how grounded she was, even when she won an Oscar. In her acceptance speech, she said that it was the greatest moment of her career. And her husband at the time said, "Why didn't you say it was the greatest moment of your life?" And she responded that having her children and having her life the way it's been has been the best moment of her life.
I really like it when show business people admit that fame and fortune isn't the ultimate from them. It makes them seem like real people.
Yeah. Well, and she said that she loved it. She, like, after she started doing show business, like, she never would have wanted to do anything else. But her career and her life are different. They're totally separate.
Actually, I think in the beginning of her memoir, she mentions, like, she still sometimes had regrets about not becoming a veterinarian because she loves animals, which is surprising, but it's very cute. By the way, did you ever notice that her daughter in Carousel is Zanita, the mayor's daughter in The Music Man?
Yeah, I had no idea about that, but it just goes to show how effective a weird accent can be.
They look totally different to me.
Yeah, they do. They do look different, but they also like speak differently. Like
in
Carousel, she's like mild mannered. And then like in Music Man, she's loud and obnoxious.
Right. And actually, so we already mentioned that Carousel is not really our favorite. I think if you write down the plot, just the quick synopsis, it's not bad. I think the idea is a guy who made mistakes goes back to somewhat make it up to his wife and his daughter for screwing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the way it's done and executed is troublesome.
Yeah, I don't love the line, like, when you're in love, it doesn't hurt at all.
Yeah, you can get hit as often. It's just, it feels like a hug.
Yeah, not the message I want.
Right. But that actually was her favorite musical. I think because it was her favorite score, I should say. I don't know what her favorite.
Well, I do like the music.
Yes. So, and the music was extremely successful. And I think it was Richard Rodgers' favorite score as well. So there, it has value. It's just upsetting sometimes.
Yeah.
But you should see Oklahoma this week. I insist, especially if you've never seen it. It's time to fix that. Honestly, I should see some of the newer remakes with like Hugh Jackman as Curly. It would be difficult, but I could do it.
Oh, was that a movie or was that Broadway? Or
oh, actually, I don't know. I kind of feel like because it's Hugh Jackman, they would have recorded it somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure it's recorded. Yeah, I'm sure it probably is. But this version of Oklahoma is free right now on YouTube, so there's no excuses for not watching it. It's got ads, but it's still free. There are some musicals that are only good because you grew up watching them, I think. But yeah. Oklahoma is not one of those. I think that everybody, well, I can't say everybody, but I think most people would enjoy it, even if it's their first time watching it as an adult. I introduced it to some of my kids this last week, and they just loved it. It's just so funny.
One. Yeah, I think that's why we watched it so much, because it was one of the few that I remember watching from beginning to end every time. Whereas Sound of Music, I don't know if we made it all the way to the end. My Fair Lady, Fiddler on the Roof. I remember the first parts of all of those really well, but the end, I'm like, oh yeah, that's how it ends. I kind of forget.
Yeah, kind of peters out a little bit.
Yeah, this one is solid and punchy. all the way through.
Yeah. Well, and it's not so mature that like kids don't understand what's going on in it. Like,
yeah,
the storyline is simple and the music is catchy. So this next week is a new to me film, Invaders from Mars, which they had a 1950s version, which is the one we're going to be watching. And there's also a 1980s one, which could be interesting too.
We'll see. I haven't seen it either. Hopefully we don't have regrets to share with you next week. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
See ya.
Thank you.